So, welcome to the last talk of the fifth edition of Human Entities. We're CADA, I'm Jared Hawkey, and this is Sophia Oliveira. And as organisers of this event, we must thank the DG Arts for its financial support. CADA would also like to thank our fantastic partner, the Lisbon Architectural Triennale, for hosting and promoting the event. And we're also especially grateful to our supporters, Lisbon City Council, and Professor Nuno Correia at Nova Links, Universidad Nova de Lisboa. We must also thank Chloe Gashtin, who works with CADA and was involved in the research of this programme, and Professor Jennifer Gabrice for accepting our invitation. We are honoured to welcome you here this evening. Thank you. Professor Jennifer Gabrice's work has been enormously influential in guiding our thoughts on how societal processes and ubiquitous computing are interwoven. Fundamentally, her 2016 book, Programme Earth, addresses what she terms the becoming environmental of computation. Here, one of the central themes is to describe the way in which digital technologies, or more specifically, computationally enabled sensors, deploy processes which in certain situations become so much more than tools, so much more than instruments or extensions of human subjects. Thus, looking beyond the model of technology where computation is simply added to pre-existing subjects or environments, Jennifer investigates sensor technologies as examples of dynamic media formations which structure both our experience and the ways in which we make and remake environments. In short, for Jennifer, computation goes beyond reading and representing the world, but inherently implies the capacity to take part in the making of the world, and thus the becoming of a computational planet. It was with this framework in mind that we invited Professor Gabrice to present her recent research on the societal and political effects of wiring natural environments. Jennifer Gabrice is Chair in Media, Culture and Environment in the Department of Sociology at the University of Cambridge. She leads the Planetary Praxis Research Group and is Principal Investigator on the ERC-funded project Smart Forests, Transforming Environments into Social Political Technologies. She also leads the Citizen Sense and AirKit projects, which have both received funding from the ERC, that is the European Research Council. She writes on digital technologies, environments and social life, with recent publications including How to Do Things with Sensors in 2019 and Program Earth and the Environmental Sensing Technology and the Making of a Computational Planet in 2016. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for that generous introduction, and hopefully I didn't start sharing my screen prematurely, but thanks so much to CADA for inviting me to present newish work from the Smart Forest project that does very much draw on my earlier work, but is going in a slightly different direction in thinking about forests. So this is one piece in particular that I've developed that is a kind of response to attempting to do field work in a time of COVID, and thinking about how digital technologies, including AI, allow us to tune into environments and even see how environments are also moving. And I do this through the concept of the forest that walks, which hopefully will become more apparent what I mean by that as I go through this talk. So walking has generated multiple narratives that unfold through the musings of a single body in motion. Within these studies, the sensing human body becomes a mobile observation platform, gathering experiences and forming impressions that generate compilations of sight. In a different way, practices of walking together, whether through researching and conversing, or through marching, protesting, and collectively organizing, increasingly feature within studies of social life and social movements. From environmental protests against contaminated landfills in Warren County, North Carolina, to silent marches, including of protesters seeking justice for Grenfell Tower victims in London, people moving and walking together can further activate environmental engagements and forms of storytelling that seek to transform unjust conditions. But how do sites, including many organisms that compose environments, also walk and form collectives? Moreover, how do digital technologies differently mobilize environments through remote and distributed engagements that reconstitute walking? How does a forest walk through digital technologies and AI? And what human entities are composed here? These questions are initially spurred by one particular form of collective walking in Chile. Here, Atacameño indigenous leaders protesting lithium mining in the Atacama region walked over 350 kilometers to the regional capital, Antofagasta. They referred to their protest as the desert that walks. These walkers carried the desert with them as they protested against lithium extraction in Chile, where 40% of the world's lithium is located. The desert mobilized their journey and became present as another way of inhabiting the land beyond extractivism. The desert further circulated through different forms of media as it became part of a larger environmental campaign. It also traveled through the circuits of extraction that mine, distribute, and recompose desert materials along global supply chains, and the multiple forms of monitoring that would track the movement of these resources. These different desert walks show how collectives can form through the process of movement. In a parallel way, and across different locations, I want to discuss today and investigate the forest that walks. While there has been much emphasis on humanoids walking against a backdrop of the world around them, I seek to decenter and transform this usual diagram of human movement. Instead, this investigation considers more than human mobilities and distributions of sight, especially in relation to digital technologies and how they activate and access environments. So my aim here is twofold. In the first instance, to consider the relative more than human and forest-based vectors of movement in relation to existing walking scholarship and as a way of characterizing sensing and movement. And in the second instance, to investigate how digital technologies co-constitute and mobilize forests as distributed sites that travel across platforms, data sets, observation technologies, and participatory apps. So this research is part of the Smart Forest project that you heard about earlier, which studies the consequences of the increasing digitalization of forest environments. It develops in part as an inquiry into forests and technologies. It also works toward an emergent form of digital fieldwork that unfolds in the context of potentially inaccessible sites, whether due to COVID and travel restrictions, or due to geopolitical conflict, extraction and violence, securitization, territorial restrictions, and infectious diseases. How is it possible to find other ways to walk to and in the forest? By working with the example of the Global Forest Watch, which I'll discuss later, I consider how forests walk, whether through digital tools for observing their movement, tracking supply chains, or receiving alerts that remind various actors to return to forests to detect and act on environmental change. The point here is not to stretch walking into an amorphous analytic, but rather to consider how it is a cascade of relations through which entities and worlds mobilize and are mobilized. These relations, moreover, can be activated by decentering humans as situated within specific places. So such a realignment can draw attention to the way of knowing and being in sites that also tend to overlook other forest inhabitations, from indigenous experiences and cosmologies, to more than human relations, which are often rendered less significant when addressing environmental change. Forests are on the move, yet their shifting patterns are more or less detectable to forest dwellers or urbanites, sensors or satellites. Increasing temperatures, collapsing biodiversity, expanding development, and dispossession of indigenous people contribute to changing forms and formations of forest spaces. Worldwide, forests are declining. They are receding by millions of hectares every year due to deforestation. In some places, however, forests are expanding due to climate change. This restless, often destructive movement in turn informs the movements of multiple organisms and forest dwellers, including where or whether they can move within forest spaces. When forests move, they do so with multiple other entities. Their movements transform how other organisms can travel. The forest walks through environmental change and across remote sensing satellites. It is transported through in-situ engagements, as well as stories and digital dashboards that would narrate and monitor shifting forest inhabitations. Despite the movements of ecosystems and organisms, as well as atmospheric and oceanic currents, walking is most often reserved as a practice that describes human movement. Within walking literature, the individual human, often also a privileged human who can occupy public space, has dominated as a figure of movement, with environments, organisms, and other people often playing the role of scenic backdrop to heroic endeavors. These movements have at times been characterized in a register of flânerie, where an untethered human drifts within typically urban spaces, gathering impressions but remaining relatively detached from the conditions through which movement occurs. Such accounts often focus on individuals moving. Accounts of walking and thinking also abound, where the emphasis is placed on working out ideas through solitary movement or grappling with states of inner torment by remaining in motion. Yet at the same time, increasingly, there's more attention to walking as a collective action. Walking with others can take multiple forms, from marching in protest to research and inquiry. Within the area of environmental and social justice, demonstrations and protests become crucial ways to take up and transform spaces. The gathering of people can disrupt traffic, remake urban circulation, transform everyday patterns, and introduce different practices and exchanges that can alter the spaces within which walking occurs. In what is often referred to as a movement that launched environmental justice as a more consolidated movement in 1982, protesters fighting against illegal dumping of PCB-contaminated soil in Warren County, North Carolina, marched arm in arm on highways, faced off with heavy equipment dumping soil in landfills, and lay on roadways to stop operations. In a different but resonant way, walking and marching as practices have characterized multiple social movements, from Black Lives Matter to climate strikes, to the Grenfell Silent Walks in London, protesting the UK government's lack of response to the tragic fire that destroyed high-rise housing with flammable cladding and led to the deaths of 72 people. By walking together, people express a sense of shared struggle and reflection. Walking can then activate solidarity through collective movement. Walking can also be a formative part of fieldwork, research, and inquiry, whether undertaken individually or collectively. So in this way, a prior research project I worked on, Citizen Sense, has worked with communities to install sensors for tuning into air pollution from industry, traffic, and construction. Walks form a critical part of this research, which involves collectively identifying where to sense pollution, as well as how to develop strategies for environmental intervention and transformation. So walking becomes a technique for mobilizing collective inquiry while speculating about the possibilities for environmental transformation. These forms of walking and research can also become integral to reconstituting engagements with environments. Yet this is not to cast a simple binary between individual and collective walking, because solitary walks can also call on collective memory and inhabitation while also serving as witness to changes in land and living practices, such as Raja Shahada's walks in Palestine over many years. What such collective walking practices bring to the foreground is a greater attention to how movement takes place with others, including organisms and ecosystems. Walking becomes a way to craft experience and activate place. These processes of movement can crystallize subjects and relations to environments and other entities, even in their absence or as hauntings. When Indigenous communities living in Atacama Desert environments describe their process of becoming a desert that walks, the usual conditions of movement are thrown into question. By walking 350 kilometers to the capital to protest mining practices, they activated their collective walk as more than a movement of multiple humans to the political center of commerce and national government. Even more, they walked as representatives of the desert, a desert that moved them and moved them to action. In this way, they carried their responsibility for and attachment to the desert with them. Their experiences of the desert and of being desert inhabitants were not registering in the centers of governments, where policymakers cast decisions about resource extraction based on investment opportunities and often detached facts about subsurface minerals. The Atacameño Indigenous leaders carried the desert with them as a way of life, memory, social movement, political engagement, and concern. Here, walking materializes overlooked relations. It also unfolds as a haunting, which can quite literally mean to walk as an otherworldly or shadowy inhabitation. And as I mentioned in the introduction, the desert traveled even farther as it circulated through media as well as ongoing extraction. To story and be storied by environments as walking, to observe their movements and attend to how they travel, is then to reconstitute the possible formations and relations across subjects and environments. The forest that walks designates a practice of decentering the human as the locus of movement and action. Such a practice tunes into how ecosystems and organisms travel, how their movements form shifting relations, and how these patterns turn up within different sensing practices that are not necessarily situated within a discrete body-place configuration. This could even be a way to rework colonial epistemic practices that place a particular kind of human at the center of knowledge practices and experiences, which typically hinge on a bifurcation with nature. One possible thread of research would be to learn from the different practices of how people, including forest dwellers, walk with environments and environments walk with them. Another thread would be to consider how the decentering of the human can generate different ways of understanding environmental movement. While these and multiple other threads intersect when considering the different perspectives about how the forest walks, I'm going to take up now the second thread by turning in the next section of this talk to consider how digital technologies mobilize forests. And I want to specifically consider how digital technologies organize ways of doing fieldwork that set environments in motion and that also demonstrate how environments are already on the move. Returning to the questions that I outlined in the introduction, I want to now consider not only the forest that walks, but also how it could be possible to find other ways to walk with forests in a time when it can be difficult to walk in forests. The Smart Forest Research Project studies the increasing digitalization of forest environments and asks how these technologies are transforming relations with these spaces. One aspect of this research has been to consider how forests surface as different compositions within digital networks and infrastructures. A forest site could be designated as a biodiversity reserve, a carbon store, or a site of special scientific interest. Yet these designations require more than the bounded site to take on their distinct eco-social forms. They also require policy documents and observation technologies, financial investments and political agreements, media campaigns and citizen engagement, and forest inhabitations and stories. Such forest sites could then be described as distributed networks. The movements of forests then here potentially unfold not primarily as particular versions of humans moving through space, but more through a distinct approach to digital fieldwork that considers how forest sites travel through technologies and data, including remote sensing, web cameras, sensors, digital dashboards, participatory apps, AI, and many other devices and processes can document events in forest environments. By focusing on these devices, I'm not suggesting that humans are not present, but rather that they are reconstituted through these digital engagements with the forest that walks. In a similar related study, Andrea Ballestero has considered how underground and inaccessible aquifers in Costa Rica become available to various forms of environmental management and attention through remote sensing. These techno-scientific practices of what she calls touching with light render spaces that are out of sight and out of touch available to observation, albeit in particular ways that have distinct consequences for ways of life, politics, and governance. Smart forests then pose the dilemma of how to research these digital environmental compositions through situated encounters. The forest could be a designated location, yet it could also be constituted within the data capture of sensors and satellites. It could circulate through policy documents and white papers that mobilize data towards some form of protection. And it could also surface as transformed practices of observation and detection that filter through participatory monitoring technologies. And it could be present as an integral contributor to distinct ways of life. Yet this dilemma further multiplies in a time of COVID and ongoing geopolitical conflict. If researchers are located at some distance from forests, then they might be accessed through less proximate sensing practices. The conditions for experiencing field sites and for undertaking field work, whether within forests, data centers, or digital infrastructures, can shift and filter through non-proximate locations. In this way, approaches to knowing and experiencing sites that require humans as the central and located entity for forming experiences and understanding are transformed. Here, certain humans are unable to access forests directly, and by extension are unable to form distinct types of what Haraway would otherwise call situated knowledges. So here, situated knowledges are really not possible. Practices such as fieldwork and walking can reinforce the sense that being in place is the best way to understand these locations. And these forms of research do generate experiences that cannot be replicated through less proximate forms of study. Yet the absence of researchers from sites can also dismantle the usual understanding of bodies in sites that lead to unexamined understandings of sensing and knowing. More distanced and digital fieldwork can also rework the binary delineations of online and offline worlds. There are many texts outlining how digital technologies can augment fieldwork, for instance, in the form of GPS or augmented reality and many other digital tools. And digital ethnography is, of course, a well-established area of research. However, digital fieldwork could also, in a different way, decenter the human from both in situ augmented research and from the topic of research. And here's where I suggested when looking at forests through these digital technologies, they erupt in a different way as being composed and circulating through webcams and acoustic sampling, satellite maps and sensor feeds, apps and platforms, Instagram accounts and Twitter threads. These technologies differently distribute forest sites. They also surface particular ways of undertaking digital fieldwork from non-proximate locations. In the forest, in the process, forests show up as walking in ways that might have been less evident if human researchers were the primary measure of movement and experience. So I want to now take this kind of two sets of moves of looking at walking and different ways of thinking about walking through environments that move, and thinking about this then more specifically through digital technologies and how they mobilize environments such as forests, to look at one particular platform and app called Global Forest Watch, which is monitoring primarily tropical and subtropical forests, but not only around the world, and has a number of features for tracking forests and deforestation. So Global Forest Watch is a long-standing and extensive public platform for forest data that was relaunched. It had an even longer trajectory, but it was relaunched in its particular form in 2014. And this platform allows users to view multiple layers of forest data that document deforestation, wildfires, and reforestation. Global Forest Watch is hosted by the World Resources Institute, which is based in Washington, D.C., and it includes more than 100 partners, including Agro Satellite, Astro Digital, Digital Globe, Google, NASA, and many other technology companies, as well as development organizations around the world. The forest turns up on this platform as a series of data sets presented in geospatial layers. Tree loss, fire alerts, and drivers of deforestation can be toggled on and off, compared with satellite base maps and animated in time series displays. Dashboards show where and when forest changes are occurring, whether at national or regional levels or through custom areas of interest. Despite the remoteness of studying forest change through this Global Forest Watch platform, the events displayed on the site are relatively instantaneous. Forest monitoring is, as Global Forest Watch emphasizes, designed for action. In this respect, its data and tools are meant to, quote, empower people everywhere to better protect forests. Such action on forest change is organized through the ability to monitor world's forests in near real time, as they say. In other words, while viewers and users of this platform are not nearby in space, the site attempts to generate proximity in time. With data sets such as the Global Land Analysis Discovery Collections that focus especially on tropical and subtropical forest changes, Global Forest Watch uses cutting-edge algorithms, satellite technology, and cloud computing in their characterization to support a series of tools, including dashboards and apps for tracking deforestation by country, receiving fire alerts, and analyzing supply chains. Changes in forests materialize on satellite and vector maps as patterns of vegetation moving across space and time. Time series animations show green patches of forest carved into polygons for soybean cultivation, corridors for roadways, and blank rectangles for timber harvesting. Rather than study forest changes through a walk in the forest, instead, forests walk across this platform through data sets, satellite traces, policy documents, and supply chain analysis. The alert is a key feature of this instantaneity, where deforestation data from Landsat 7 and 8 satellites are updated weekly, and fire data from NASA satellites and visible and infrared scanner, or VIRS, data sets are updated daily. By setting up an account on the Global Forest Watch platform, a user can receive alerts about specific areas. The stated intention of the platform is that government officials and law enforcement workers can keep track of and stop illegal activities, journalists can undertake more informed investigations, and companies can monitor supply chains more closely. But the alert also becomes a way to walk to and with the forest, albeit in a specific way, where reminders are sent to return to the site, take action, and observe the forest as it walks. In addition to organizing action through instantaneity, the Global Forest Watch platform generates distinct topologies and topographies of remoteness. Imagined users are not necessarily in situ, but at various degrees of remove from forests, whether they are sustainability managers overseeing supply chains, government officials, researchers, or local environmental officials. An introductory video explaining the Global Forest Watch platform starts with the well-known question, quote, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, does it make a sound? End quote. The platform is meant to provide a more proximate set of details about deforestation, even when users are remote from forest events. This is seen to be a way to make deforestation more legible, transparent, and actionable, whereas the narrator to the introductory video, which you can see a screen grab of here, notes, so now if a tree falls in the forest, everyone hears it. The nobody that would be present in the forest to observe and walk with it is here replaced with digital presence that would make available forest events to everyone, who are now able to protect forests everywhere, in their words. Yet these digital structures could complicate environmental governance by making data seemingly easily available without attending to which data are excluded and who is best placed and most able to act on forest changes. Remoteness is furthermore a shared condition across multiple actors engaged with forests, from journalists to researchers and government officials. Indigenous communities are unevenly included in this diagram of action, which assumes distance and non-inhabitation as the basis for monitoring, setting up, and receiving alerts. At the same time, local people, such as farmers and government officials, would be able to receive alerts so as to locate sites of disturbance or take action based on deforestation and fire events. So there are here people who are meant to be on the ground who are activated to move in relation to the movements of forests. But this is a particular configuration of the forest that walks, which is somewhat distinct from the desert protest walk discussed earlier. Digital technologies here organize and inform approaches taken to environments which configure data as the basis to action. Yet as the Atacama example suggests, action can also be activated through other registers of environmental engagement that are not primarily or principally data-oriented. This approach to remoteness and action took on even more concrete form sort of in the early days of the arrival of COVID. In May 2020, Global Forest Watch hosted a webinar to discuss the potential of its tools in the new reality of remote work. In the absence of being able to visit field sites or undertake sustained field work, Global Forest Watch representatives noted that many of its tools could be used to gain an almost immediate sense of forest disturbance activities that could be occurring. These webinar hosts undertook a detailed walkthrough of the platform, showing how users could keep track of specific forest areas and track their movements and changes over time by using different data layers, satellite base maps, and custom alerts. The dashboard and the map here become the interface that organizes forest encounters and experience. Rather than field workers walking through forests, forests walk to them through digital tools and these particular configurations of experience. The walkthrough is actually another way of walking within digital environments. This is a kind of new media studies concept developed by Light et al., where they describe the walkthrough method as a forensic investigation into apps and the assumptions they code into user experience. By using a step-by-step practice of walking through every stage of an app or platform, one can encounter the assumed users to whom such sites are directed, the constitution of social worlds that one is meant to inhabit, and the forms of action that are embedded as self-evident and necessary. These operations configure actions, relations, and social political worlds. At the same time, apps and platforms are not worlds unto themselves, and they program and activate particular relations and effects. So here you can receive regular alerts and start undertaking certain kinds of movements with forests. And these are chains of actions that are meant to be universal and transparently available to everyone everywhere. Digital fieldwork here performs distinct distributions of sites as networked, distant, layered, scalable, and actionable. So here are these digital tools and apps rework sites for environmental governance. And they also reconstitute sites through different distributions and forms of sites and sensing. Here, remote sensing activates particular users to walk with forests, to notice the forest that walks, and to take actions in relation to these distinctly configured sites. Yet how or whether people are moved to act because of forest changes is another question. In other words, would data about deforestation move one to act on an alert? Here we could draw on Jenna Burrell, who notes with digital ethnography and network sites that the point is less to attempt to study sites in their assumed entirety and instead to work through entry points rather than bounded locations. So here we could think about how sites are composed through these digital tools and what actions they put in motion and what the consequences are for environmental governance and forms of engagement, and ask whether these are the forms of computing that are most effective or most just in relation to forest inhabitants. So wrapping up now in the conclusion to this presentation, I want to think finally about places in motion. In contrast to more human-centered approaches to walking, I've tried in this discussion to linger with the forest that walks in multiple iterations. The motivation for this shift in focus is to at once de-center the human from walking narratives, and in so doing, to open up multiple different registers for how walking forests could be encountered, observed, and potentially narrated. By de-centering the human, or certain types of humans at least, from walking, sites as moving compositions of more than humans potentially become more present. At the same time, the figure of the moving and sensing human is necessarily recast through its initial and apparent absence. This leads to a consideration of who is in the forest and who is walking with the forest. Different degrees of proximity to and remoteness from forests can suspend and transform encounters with sites. The forest here could be a situated set of encounters, but it could also be a traveling digital experience, a set of narratives that animate different eco-social movements. Forests move, and they also move others to walk with them. These movements show up in environmental actions and campaigns against deforestation. They also surface in digital and AI-based platforms that would keep a constant watchful eye over the ongoing loss of forests. In a time of COVID, when forest visits could be difficult or impossible for some people, remote encounters with forests as distributed sites and networks become increasingly important. Forest managers, government officials, corporate sustainability personnel, and local farmers encounter forests differently through geospatial data and near real-time alerts. These become tools of environmental governance that also attempt to walk with forests when walking in forests can be more challenging. At the same time, these tools operate within certain epistemic and ontological regimes that do not necessarily accommodate indigenous ways of life and experiences of walking with forests. As Sundberg notes, walking with is also a way of walking toward more pluriversal worlds and encounters. Could a digital dashboard accommodate indigenous experiences of the forest that walks? Or would different experiences, encounters, and technologies be necessary to enable this pluriversality? How might indigenous experiences of how they are the forest that walks register as significant for addressing environmental change? Places are in motion, as Weisner and Lee note, and storytelling here in a digital modality becomes a way to constitute place, presence, stories, and the storier. Walking with and alongside through stories in media is a way of experiencing sights. However, it is also a way in which sights go walking. Digital technologies reconstitute subjects and environments, especially in the context of mass deforestation, climate change, and extractivism, in some cases enabling or causing these same events. Such moving compositions of forest sites can directly inform environmental governance. The forest walks through these multiple events, and multiple entities walk with forests. Digital tools present one way of considering how to walk when absent from sites, but they also point to the need to develop walking worlds that are more open to multiple stories and forest inhabitations. Rather than propose these digital tools as solutions to engaging with the forest that walks in a time of remote fieldwork, I've suggested instead today that we could consider how technologies reconstitute forests and forest engagements in ways that have direct consequences for how to tune in to moving forests and to walk with forests and other forest inhabitants. So it sounds like it's Guy Fawkes early here. So here are references if you're interested in following up on this topic. You can see a piece here on the forest that walks in qualitative inquiry. And for a broader sense of ongoing forest work and sensing and the ways in which I've been speaking about subjects and environments, you can find further work there in Smart Forests and Program Earth. And I can just go ahead here also and thank very much the ERC and, of course, the whole Smart Forest team, the University of Cambridge and CADA for the invitation to present today. So I'm looking forward to the conversation. And I'll try to escape out of this multiply shared screen here.
Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
I'm short, so I have to... Yes. Thank you very much for this fascinating presentation. I would just like to understand a little bit better something that left me confused in relation to your position. Because on the one hand, you explained so well that a lot of aspects of the forest are left out through data, and data anyway is a representation. On the other hand, you speak of an encounter with forests through digital media. No, I mean, this is like ceci n'est pas une pipe. But is it actually, I mean, what are we talking about?
Yes, no, I think, you know, you've hit on what is a key tension with a lot of these technologies and what that then means for environmental action and governance. So, you know, many forms of environmental observation depend on these tools. And they do organize certain forms of knowing and action. You certainly can receive an alert to know when deforestation is occurring and potentially could even avert those events. But at the same time, it is a very particular way of monitoring a forest, of deciding what a forest even is in the first instance, what counts as deforestation, and who the subjects would then be to rightfully act on the problem of deforestation. So it's a particular way of organizing movement with the forests. And I think this is the problem and also the experience that one encounters when, you know, during COVID and lockdown, not being able to do field work. So what are the ways in which you end up engaging with forests? It's often through these digital tools and dashboards and data, doing a scan of these different technologies and tuning into different forest environments around the world. but then realizing how much one is dependent on this digital constitution of forests, which has certain opportunities, does organize certain kinds of action, but then it's not able to obviously accommodate other forms of action, knowing and experience of the forest. So I was trying to work with that tension, not to perform a sort of simple critique of a digital platform, to show what it does enable, but also to suggest all the things that it might leave out, and to think about what this would mean for designing technologies otherwise, and also accommodating other experiences that don't necessarily circulate through digital observation. So I hope that helps to maybe answer your question. It's quite dramatic watching these shadowy figures emerge from the darkness.
Hi, Jennifer. I was seeing one of your slides that you have like kind of a mobile application that you can like kind of report. Is it like ready for people to use it like in a bad way? So, for example, having people using it, indicating a specific place that it's actually causing some deforestation and doing like kind of geo spoofing on that place. Is there work that detects this type of bad behavior of trying to emulate that on specific regions that actually there is no deforestation? So I don't know, maybe certain entities want to try to force like some entities to go there, make some provocations out of it?
No, that's a really interesting question. So I don't know of any instances of geo-spoofing, but these platforms and apps are largely based on remote sensing data. It is possible to add your own observations for certain types of users, but it's largely based on an analysis of remote sensing imagery that would then activate alerts. So for instance, right now I've signed up on Global Forest Watch with various alerts set to track wildfires that are occurring, fires that are occurring in different locations, different forest locations around the world. So I receive these alerts on a kind of, probably about a dozen times a day right now. There are fire alerts in the Amazon, for instance. So it's largely based on remote sensing, but it does raise the question, if you were able to have a more participatory aspect to this, would people either obscure deforestation events, or would they suggest they were occurring where there were none? And for what sort of purpose? Who would they activate? I think one of the things I've realized as a quite remote user of the tool is that you could receive alerts and not be in a position to act on them. So when there's a fire occurring in Brazil or in Sweden, when you're based in Cambridge or London, it's not as though you can go out into the field and do something. So I think you'd have to also probably do a certain amount of social engineering to understand who the alert actors were, if you wanted to geo spoof and so on. But it does raise an interesting question of how these tools of environmental governance could also give rise to false positives or false negatives.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. It was really, stimulating. So, I don't know. You mentioned in your reply to Adriana's question that you weren't wanting to just present a critical case. My question is, there's a kind of slightly playful aspect to the idea of walking and a walking forest. So I was just wondering why you didn't want to present such a critical case, and what might be the problems of tackling a problem like deforestation more head on.
Yes, well, it's not to remove the possibilities of a critical engagement, but I think there's a fair amount of work that now would pick a kind of an easy platform to deconstruct, as it were. So in the walkthrough, method that I mentioned, those authors choose a dating app and they, you know, go through all the assumptions about what is desirable in a dating app and how users are configured and relations are configured and how problematic these are within a kind of digital space. And I think with the Global Forest Watch, there are certain kinds of actions that people have found help them understand forest activity and deforestation and to map various issues with supply chains. So there's something I think that is kind of interesting and useful about how those tools are operating. But at the same time, they do become these universal techniques and ways of characterizing forest environments, forest subjects, and forest cosmologies. So it's that aspect that I wanted to bring a kind of critical engagement with and think about what it means to track a forest as it's moving, as it's deforested, as it's turned into soy products or, you know, converted into any number of sort of different resources. How are people tuned into those activities and what are the consequences for what that means for environmental governance? But what other things are left out? So, you know, are these still spaces where Indigenous people are able to tell their stories of how they walk with forests and these other pluriversal worlds of ways of walking with forests? So that's not to a lied critique, it's to say it's one of the registers, but it's not the only register.
Thanks. And another question was about, I mean, your term forest dwellers. Sorry, I don't know whether you can hear me. Forest dwellers. Could you just say a little bit more about, I mean, obviously it's a deliberately inclusive term, but I mean, how inclusive is it? I mean, does it include species of plants? And I mean, just, yeah, if you could say a little bit about that. Thanks.
Yes, so that is a term that is deliberately trying to think beyond, you know, a kind of human inhabitant as such to all the different entities who are living in forests and who compose forests and have to move when forests move. So when there are deforestation events, who is having to shift or be dispossessed or relocated as a part of that movement. So yes, it is meant to be, I guess, expansive and pluralistic in a way of thinking about, well, what is this practice of dwelling with a forest? And where is it taking place? You know, is it one human in one sort of forest location, or is it much more sort of multifaceted than that? So yes, plants, organisms, of all kinds, fungi, mycorrhizal networks, which I'm sure you've heard more about in your previous section, and animals of all kinds, and even entities that aren't composed as species as such. So,
hi, thank you for your Hello. Presentation. It was quite eye-opening, and there is so much to talk about, actually, so it's hard to find the right question to ask, but like, one of the topics that would interest me is, for example, kind of how can we work towards supporting the local communities? And because I see a lot that, I don't know, is colonized aspects of, wealthy people who are like, oh, forests, I'm going to start a permaforest culture now, and I'm going to look for funding, and then they get funding, and then they move to Portugal from Holland and start building forests again. And it's really upsetting, and at the same time I don't really know how we can find a balance and how we can create outreach both first financially but also like from the know-how, because all this sensory data and satellite imagery is quite the opposite of accessible. Many of the things are from military spy companies, and it's really expensive to get to the pictures, and there are few organizations that can actually open the access, I would say. So, yeah.
Wow. I mean, thanks for that question. There's so much packed in there. I'm not really sure where to start, except to say that, yes, this is absolutely a key question and consideration. Who are these technologies serving? Who's responsible for these technologies? Who is building them, maintaining them? Who has access to the data? And how is this creating new forms of power politics in relation to environmental change and environmental crisis? And how are other communities then expected to variously align with these practices? And what problems and inequalities and injustices does that create? Which is an absolutely central question that we're dealing with the Smart Forests project. And you can see this in so many different technologies. For instance, tree planting platforms. There's an absolutely bewildering array of tree planting platforms now. And it can be quite difficult to understand how the tree planting is taking place, whether it is actually improving local livelihoods, whether it is kind of gimmick, whether it's a kind of offsetting technique that allows wealthy countries to continue to fly and to burn fossil fuels and other things. So it's exactly these kinds of dynamics that we're looking at more carefully in terms of how it can be addressed. I think, you know, people are asking how to create technologies with communities that help them maintain and extend their ways of life that don't require that they become, you know, just a kind of another item within a digital environmental governance project. So I think this is, you know, potentially a real hazard, is that they, you know, there is this kind of God's eye view of forests activity, deforestation, and the technologies are not necessarily developed in all cases with communities. So I think Global Forest Watch is working in different ways to try to do that, but obviously it's drawing on a lot of remote sensing and other data sets as well. So it, yes, I think this is an ongoing question and matter to attend to, is how to create just digital tools that are not also seen as the kind of techno fix to problems, that they're sort of appropriate to the circumstance, but that they don't become a kind of totalizing logic for how to engage with environments and environmental problems.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. What about Portugal? Do you know of any smart forests in Portugal?
There are smart forests in Portugal. I was just looking at one the other day, and someone also emailed me and asked me if I wanted to set up sensors there in their smart forests. We're not yet at the level, though, of saying we're going to this forest in Portugal. I know there are also a lot of mobile applications in Portugal for Internet of Things, forest tracking of wildfires, and drone-based tracking of wildfires, so kind of alert systems that are in place. So there's sensor test beds in Portugal with these technologies. So I think, you know, these technologies, they travel kind of really around the world. And what we're interested in is how they then get taken up in specific environments, communities, and circumstances, and the effects that they have. So I think it would be amazing if we could get to Portugal and spend some time looking at these installations and see what sort of effects they're having.
Thank you. Okay, we'll leave it there then. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, it's really, really excellent. Thanks from all of us.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the invitation. And it's been a really interesting and exciting experiment in having you outdoors. I hope you're not freezing.
All right. Exactly, yeah. I don't know if you heard that. So Adriana's saying, wish we could go to dinner together.
Oh, that would be lovely. Yeah. Well, another time.
Another time. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. Okay. Bye then. Yeah.